Over the years of interviewing thousands of athletes, I've always been fascinated about what makes them tick and their interest beyond just the sport they play. And I've got to tell you that Adonald Foyle is somebody that I met a number of years ago. Matter of fact, when he first came into the NBA, and I've been able to follow his career. He's now retired after 13 seasons in the NBA, drafted in the first round by the Golden State Warriors, also playing for the Orlando Magic and the Memphis Grizzlies. But what always fascinated me about him was not only his life and how he got to professional basketball, but also what he has done with his life. He went to Colgate, where he was the NCAA's all-time leader in block shots. And then in his official biography, he said he enrolled at Colgate University because he wanted the opportunity to learn the principles of the game in a slower-paced setting where the coach would be able to give him the attention he desired. Now, not too many athletes are that discernible. But also, he was somebody that along the way in his career was politically motivated, and he even founded the organization Democracy Matters, which tries to curb effects of money on politics. There are not too many athletes that I think you'll ever hear that about. Adonald, good to talk to you again. And since we are in an election mode here in this country, I want to ask you, as a guy that came from the Caribbean island, a very small one, and you take a look at the political process in this country, tell me what your impressions are.
It's quite remarkable. I think what you get a sense of is that most people, there is a series of issues, but everybody seems to be someplace in the middle. It's very few issues get played. I mean, it's amazing that you can have two presidential debates and not hear anything about the environment. I mean, to me, that is unbelievable. Or yet you can have people still questioning the science of global warming. I mean, there is just something that I think is very mind-boggling to the average person out there. You know, you want to talk about a war, and you don't want to talk about funding the war. You want to talk about bolstering around the world about going to war, and you don't want to talk about the draft. I mean, it's like, if we're serious about, you know, everybody sacrificing in this country for the greater good, we have not done a very good job of making the case and showing that we care enough to put it where, you know, put money into it, or put make policies that we have to feel a little bit of tinge when we our sons and daughter goes out and fight a war and more than likely going to lose their life. I mean, that's a big thing, and it shouldn't be just doing on a whim. When they come back home, they should be taken care of. That is not welfare. It's that they have gone out and served the country, and it is our duty to, when they come home, to celebrate what they have done and to give them every opportunity to continue with their lives. And when you've seen what we, with the modern warfare and the ability to protect our soldiers, we're going to have a lot of people coming home, and we already have a lot of people coming home with lost limbs. We owe it to them, you know, our debt of gratitude, to make sure that they're taken care of for the rest of their life. And that is not social welfare. So I get very annoyed in how we characterize, you know, things like Medicare, where people spend their life, and usually for most people, that's going to be the only savings they have. And you tell them at the end of the career, after they spend their entire life putting money in, the social welfare trap has to, you know, you start using words that make them feel less than. I don't think that's what this great country is about.
But, you know, the adage is KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to political campaigns, you have to keep it simple, stupid, in a sense, because the people that vote can't understand the environment. They can't understand the intricacies of war and funding and everything else. So what you have to do is that you have to talk in cliches and buzzwords. And that's not because I think everybody is stupid in this country. I think it's the fact that they've been force-fed that by the media.
Yeah, and I think everything is about, you can't sit down and have a good debate. Well, you know, how did his body language look? Did he drink too much water? Did he raise his voice? I mean, you can't have a conversation. And I think that one of the things that is happening is that we, I think, condition our politician to think in kind of the Twitter voice. You know, the Facebook. We want our news to be no more than two sentences. We don't want to sit down and watch an hour or hour and a half debate. We want to get the quick soundbite that came out of it. And I think it's a disservice to a lot of people who really want to have the debate and want to listen to it. But I think you're right. I think the way the media is today, it kind of helps you to stay in that lane of getting your news in soundbites.
You're a guy that grew up on a small island. How big was it?
Kanawan was about, I would say, 1.2 miles long and about 1.5 miles wide.
I say that because there are going to be people listening around the world to what you just said, and they're going to say, wait a minute. This kid came from a small island in the Caribbean, and he's this politically sensitive and active. What are the roots of it?
Well, I'll give you an example. I think in the last general election back in the island, the candidate we divide the country into 15 constituencies, and the ruling party won by one constituency, but by two vote in a constituency, two votes. So it gives you an idea of how personal politics is. If you go to the Caribbean, you talk to the person on the side of the street, the person in the market, the person in office, everybody is intimately aware of the political significance, the things that happen in politics, what effect it have in their lives. So I think coming in from an island where people are very politically aware to living with professors that were very integral in the civil rights movement, you know, going down and registering people to vote and really being teachers, I think it gives you that continued bridge of how to look through when you come to a new country, how you look through the lens of politics. How do you see this new worldview? And I think, you know, I've very much been a student of history. That's what I studied at Colgate. And it very much informed, I think, the way I see the world.
One of the things with Democracy Matters, you're trying to curb the effects of money on politics. Now, you know as well as I do that this election is going to cost about $1 billion or maybe even more than $1 billion. Does that blow you away?
Yeah, I think that in the actual number they're saying something is going to be $6 billion, as some estimates, which is you know, astonishing when you take the super PACs and the different groups into effect. It's almost going to be close to $6 billion. That is amazing because when you look at what's going on in this country is that the people that are allowed to speak politically, if you say that you have a system that really believe truly in democracy, and then you're saying that it's okay that 80% of the contribution in election comes from 1% of the population, that is where you have to think about it, because this is about policies. This is about the policies that gets to the people that need it. For those 80% of the money that's being spent by 1% of the population, they're going to advocate specifically for things that affects them, like tax cuts. They're not going to be taking and talking about issues about, you know, poverty. They're not going to be talking about education as much because they don't have that issue. So if money equals free speech, then the people that are speaking more than anybody else is the people that have money, and they happen to be 1% of the population.
Do you like what you see as far as campaigning and the things that you see on television as far as the ads?
I think that one of the biggest travesty in this country that has happened in 2010 is the Citizens United decision. I think when you equate money to free speech and you have unleashed unlimited amount of money in a system that has already been overrun by money, and then you say that you don't have to tell anybody where the money come from, so you can just start up a group as COVID did, and then say, you know, it's a pact, and I don't have to tell you where money comes from, and I can say anything I want, whether or not it's true. There's no way to fact check this. There is no way to hold anybody responsible because we don't know where the money is coming from. And I think in a democracy, that is very troubling. And I think, you know, the Supreme Court, I think, did a disservice to the interests of democracy with that decision.
Yeah, when it comes to the presidential election, do you think it's decided on issues? Or is it just decided on what people think the person represents?
I think, you know, we come into elections where we already have our mind made up in many ways. And therefore, the narrative of the people on the stage kind of reaffirm our belief in many ways. Because as I said, if you look at the pivot and most of the time, everybody knew that, for example, that Romney was going to pivot. We knew that. But if you look at the pivot where he comes to the middle, now everybody's now fighting, you know, for the middle, to fight for those little margin of vote in the middle. So the election is basically going to be determined by one state. I mean, how crazy is that? Because nobody, you know, you start off attacking everybody and you come to the middle and say, oh, no, now I'm a moderate and I'm trying now to fight for the middle. And that's where the election is going to be decided by two or three states.
You know, what's interesting, and we only have about 40 seconds here before we have to break, but you know, you could win the popular vote, but you could lose the election. We saw that, of course, in 2000 practically happen, and that kind of blows my mind.
Indeed. And I mean, I think Al Gore is sitting home saying, it blows my mind too, because he lost. But I mean, we have to look at the Electoral College, and I think we need serious, reform of our election system in this country.
We're talking with a man that played 13 seasons in the NBA, drafted out of Colgate in the first round by the Golden State Warriors. Now, you probably tuned in and said, wait a minute, is this a political discussion show or is this a national sports talk show? Well, I can tell you it's a national sports talk show. It's a Donald Foyle. We'll talk a little more about politics, but I also want to talk to him about Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard, of course, playing down at Orlando for a long while. He was a teammate with O'Donnell and now, of course, playing for the Los Angeles Lakers, and a very, very interesting young man that O'Donnell and I have had long talks about. We'll talk about whether he thinks he can make it in the big lights of Los Angeles as we continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.